This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
We will definitely not burn the Quran.
If you could build a church on a site, you could build a synagogue on a site, if you could build a Hindu temple on a site, then you should be able to build a mosque on the site.
If I knew this would cause this kind of pain, I would not have done it. Given that, why don't you undo it, or at least do it differently from this point on?
We are exploring all options as we speak right now.
One can't prove that God doesn't exist, but science makes God unnecessary.
I can't help thinking that when Hawking talks about this grand design, the final theory that explains everything, doesn't that appeal at some level to the scientist's desire to be a bit like God?
Florida truck drivers love Issues Etc.
It's a shame that it needs a defense, and yet it does. There's no doubt about it. An institution so long in human civilization, the foundational institution of all human civilization, of law, of government, all of those things sitting there in as the foundation stone. Suddenly, people saying, does it belong there, or should we swap it out for a different foundation, or shall we reshape this foundation and hope that the building that stands atop it remains standing? Marriage is a foundational issue. And nowadays, since it is under attack, it requires a defense. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll spend the first half hour talking with Dr. Anthony Esselin of Providence College about defending traditional marriage. Then we'll talk with Mark Galley of Christianity Today magazine about church marketing consultants' worship experiences. That's what it is now, an experience, I suppose. And the therapeutic gospel versus the liberating gospel. We're coming to you live this Wednesday afternoon, the 15th of September, and our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE. 877-623-6943, our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, or send us a tweet at @issuesetc. Dr. Anthony Esselin is professor of English at Providence College in Providence, Rhode Island. He's author of the books The Politically Incorrect Guide to Western Civilization and The Ironies of Faith. Dr. Esselin has also written a two-part series for Touchstone magazine titled Sanity and Matrimony, 10 Arguments in Defense of Marriage. Dr. Esselin, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. It's good to be here.
Very recently, Judge Vaughn Walker, in overturning or declaring unconstitutional California's Defense of Marriage Act, I believe, said that the only objections raised to same-sex marriage that he could think of were religious objections. It was a basis for his decision. Was he right?
No, he wasn't right, and it's kind of remarkable that he would say something like that to begin with. I mean, it's almost as if you would say, oh, well, gosh, the only objections to this particular law are moral objections, and well, since we can't agree about good and evil, I'll just have to dispense with the objections to the law. I mean, there's something bizarre about discrediting religious objections, and I think he also said moral objections. Out of hand. It seems self-contradictory. I mean, if law is not based on morality, it's not based on anything at all.
I don't know if you've coined this term, but I found this term intriguing in your series for Touchstone. You talk about homosexual pseudogamy or pseudogamy.
Yes.
What exactly do you mean by this?
Well, it's not marriage, and I don't think we should concede the use of the word marriage for it. It's a pretend marriage. It's a mimicking. It's not even really that they can practice. It's not possible for two people of the same to have genuine sexual intercourse. I mean, the very idea of sex is that you are in a group that is separated from another group. You're different from another group. That's what the word means. So men and women are different from one another. That's why we call them the sexes. That's what the word literally means. And to have sexual intercourse is, to have intercourse from one sex to the other sex. And anything else just mimics it. So what the homosexual activists want is us to pretend that what they're doing really is marriage. And it's not. I mean, you could as soon marry a dog or a bedpost.
Dr. Anthony Esselin is our guest. I invite your questions or comments on this Wednesday afternoon, September the 15th, as we talk about defending traditional marriage. We call it traditional marriage. We should just call it marriage, because marriage is a singularity. It doesn't have a traditional or non-traditional form or aspect. It simply is marriage. So we're talking about defending marriage on this Wednesday afternoon. Dr. Anthony Esselin is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. Your questions, your comments, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. You can email us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet as well, @issuesetc. Dr. Esselin is professor of English at Providence College in Providence, Rhode Island. Let's start with the first argument that you raise. You say that the legalization of this homosexual union, we will call for the sake of argument in kind of air quotes, marriage, would enshrine the sexual revolution in law. What do you mean, Dr. Esselin?
Well, the whole premise of the sexual revolution is that the rest of society has nothing to say when it comes to what consenting adults, and I won't even say two, maybe more, consenting adults want to do with their bodies. That's the fundamental principle of the sexual revolution. It's my body, get to do with it what I please. The common good doesn't have to be thought of. What happens to children doesn't really have to be thought of. It's all about my sexual fulfillment. And that's the premise that the whole move for homosexual pretend marriage is based on. And it would enshrine that principle in law, but it's a disastrous principle.
You say that it would enshrine this notion, as you just said, that the sexual intercourse is a matter of personal fulfillment alone with which society has nothing to do. What kind of consequences do you envision if this were legally enshrined in the United States?
Well, it has been. This would put the nail in the coffin, the last nail in the coffin. For instance, years ago when the courts decided to award a huge alimony settlement to Lee Marvin's live-in girlfriend. What the court essentially did there was to say there really is no difference between a marriage and a shacking up. Okay, and it's the same sort of thing because the people enter it with the same sort of emotional commitments or whatnot. It was a terrible thing to do to people who were legitimately married, to equate what they are doing with shacking up of two people. So the courts have been in the process of enshrining the sexual revolution for a long time now. But this would be a dagger in the heart of all of us who think that the court ought to rethink some of these bad decisions.
You also say that the legalization of homosexual marriage would drive the wedge deeper between men and women. How so?
Yeah, that's one of the 10 arguments. That may be the one that gets most people laughing. Because they say, I mean, I don't think they understand the principle. They say, well, my gosh, I mean, I love my wife. If homosexual pretend marriage was legalized, I wouldn't love my wife any less. You know, of course not. It doesn't work that way. That's not the point. The point is that the principle behind it would serve to separate the sexes further from one another, because the principle is that the sexes are not made for one another. Men are not made for women, and women are not made for men. People seek their sexual fulfillment in whatever way they seek it, okay? There's nothing particular about women that men need, and nothing particular about men that women need. And the effect of this assumption is probably seen more clearly in those women who decide to bear children without the benefit of a husband, sometimes what you have, you know, two women living together without the benefit of a father for the child, or a single woman who says, well, you know, what do I need a man for? I'll just adopt a child, or I'll get pregnant, or I'll just raise the child by myself. It's a bad principle, and the principle is that men and women are not made for one another. There's nothing special about the relationship between man and woman.
The concept of chastity is quaint nowadays, but you say that same-sex pretend marriage makes a mockery of chastity. How does it do this, Dr. Esselin?
Well, if you think about what you would say to your teenage boys and girls about the other sex, about what Christians would say about, you know, waiting for marriage, that is, you know, you don't sleep with somebody before you're married. It's wrong to do that. It's a sin against God who created us for marriage. It's also sin against charity for the other person and for the children that you might conceive. You know, all that's by the boards. It's not possible to say to your heterosexual teenagers, listen, you guys, you have to remain chaste. You have to wait until marriage. But these folks over here, the boy with his boyfriend over there, they don't have to wait. But they can do whatever they please because they're homosexual, you see. And the only way we know that they're homosexual is because they practice homosexual acts. They're not going to bear any children anyway through that. So they're doing what they please over here, but you have to keep your clothes on. That doesn't make any sense.
Dr. Anthony Esselin is our guest. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with him on this Wednesday afternoon, September the 15th, defending marriage. Stay tuned.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
Hi, this is Ville calling from Finland. I believe the day will come when you cannot enter the office as a pastor in the ELCA unless you subscribe to the ordination of gays and lesbians. And why do I believe that? Because Americans are sinners like we Finns are.
Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. IssuesETC.org.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly. issuesetc.org. Stay connected. issuesetc.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, IssuesETC.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House. Listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House. cph.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're defending marriage. Dr. Anthony Esselin is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Esselin, your point on chastity seems to be that because the homosexual defines himself or herself by the sexual act itself. It by necessity excludes any consideration of chastity for homosexuals, and thereby by extension for heterosexuals too. Is that your point?
Yeah. I mean, once you allow what let's call it fornication between say two males, what grounds can you really have other than practical grounds for denying it between a male and a female? I mean, after all, we're talking about something natural there. If you've allowed the unnatural, it seems that you have to cave in and allow what is at least biologically natural.
Does the legalization of same-sex marriage prove too much? That is, does it open the way for any and all sexual pairings?
Well, they've already started to argue about this in Canada. It's been a couple of years now, but there's a group up there agitating for reconsideration of polygamy, for instance. If marriage is what consenting adults want to make it, then why can't three consenting adults have a marriage? And if you think that's absurd, I would simply ask, well, gosh, there have been plenty of societies in the history of the human race in which a single man would be married to more than one wife. It is at least biologically possible for him to father children with more than one woman. What grounds could you possibly have for denying that? I think we'll see that down the road. This is not a slippery slope argument. This is just playing out the logic of the bad premise to start with.
Many have noted the relationship of, at least legally and kind of philosophically in our culture, of the advent of no-fault divorce and what we are witnessing today by the way of attempts to redefine and reinvent marriage. You say that the legalization of homosexual marriage seals us in a culture of divorce. What do you mean by that?
Well, there won't be any going back. The culture of divorce is predicated upon a very loose definition of marriage to begin with. You know, people get married because they have some sort of emotional attachment to one another. They find it fulfilling to be with one another sexually and emotionally. When they cease to be fulfilled in that way, we give them an amazingly free hand to just leave. In fact, what we often do is punish the person who's more loyal and grant all kinds of consideration to the person who wants to cut out. It's been a disastrous policy, and it's basically rotting our social fabric away. If we want to remain a coherent culture and society, we've got to rethink that business of no-fault divorce. But again, the premise of the homosexual agenda is simply that I should be allowed to do what fulfills me emotionally and sexually, without regard to the common good and without regard even to my bodily nature. And I don't see how you could possibly start to say, I don't know, listen, no-fault divorce. I mean, we can't allow that anymore. The homosexuals themselves, male homosexuals are notably promiscuous. They've been telling us, listen, if we pretend to be married, don't expect us to remain exclusively with one another, because that's not how we are. What do you do then? I mean, then you're going to blame a male heterosexual for being adulterous. The whole thing become a mess.
What does it do to the normal relationship between same-sex people, heterosexuals? What does it do to the concept of normal altogether?
Yeah, well, it trashes it. Had a student once who told me that a friend of his, very good friend, had just been broken up with by his girlfriend, so that they two were in a bar, and this friend of his was weeping freely, and so he gave him a hug. Just tried to pat him on the back and cheer him up a little bit. And a girl came waltzing by and said chirpily, "Are you two gay?"
And this sort of story has been repeated to me by many of my students. You don't dare draw that close to another guy because somebody will misinterpret it. Maybe the other guy will misinterpret it. It just can't be done anymore. It doesn't feel right anymore because everything now is seen through the lens of sexual activity rather than through the lens of deep, personal, same-sex friendship, which homosexuality is a perversion of.
Does the enshrinement of same-sex marriage, it's being sold as the next step forward, especially with regard to kind of civil rights for the homosexual community. Is there a potential to set to actually make things worse for the homosexual himself?
Yeah, I think that there are a few folks out there, psychologists, Christian psychologists, who are actually examining what male homosexuals, I'll just limit myself to them, what they really go through, what they feel, and why they feel what they feel. And these guys they're not happy. They are stuck with an obsession, a fetish, with male flesh. They usually were treated cruelly or brutally by their fellow boys when they were kids, or they were ignored by their fathers. Something happened to them so that they didn't develop these close male friendships. And so they're seeking sexually what they didn't have normally when they were young. And they seek it in vain. They themselves will tell us they dread growing old because they dread losing the body that their fellows would actually be interested in. They're lonely. They're preoccupied. If you go to places like Seattle or San Francisco, where where male homosexuality is condoned or even celebrated, you don't find them happier. You find them engaging in perversions that you can't even talk about on the radio, going so far afield to get a thrill to keep from being bored. It doesn't make things better for them. It just forces them to go farther and farther out.
What does same-sex marriage mean for children?
Well, you've got a 10-year-old boy who wants to be around his best friend, another 10-year-old boy. This is absolutely normal, okay? Absolutely normal for boys to get together to the exclusion of girls before puberty. It's a thing that they do. And it's normal, and nobody would have thought anything of it before. Now, once all these boys will be told by the television and newspapers and by their own teachers that there is this thing out there called homosexuality, and what will they think of? What will they think of their friendships then? I mean, what will they make of them? They will now be forced into a kind of identity crisis. I mean, why do I prefer the company of boys when I'm 10 years old? Is it because there's something wrong with me? Am I going to grow up gay or something like that? This never had to enter the mind of a kid before. Not at all. I mean, it wasn't even a category. A kid might grow up to be 15, 16 years old and never even have heard of this stuff. Okay? And that would have been fine. It was an absolute expectation of heterosexuality that everybody took for granted. And now the poor kids won't be able to take that for granted. They'll be confused, and that's dreadful for them.
Finally, then, what do you think, as you've mulled these things over, what do you think is the best argument in defense of marriage?
The best argument is the historical one. Go to every single culture that has ever existed. In every single culture that has ever existed. Even in ancient Athens, where some homosexual activity was tolerated between older men and boys, by the way, and not men you're the same age, in every single society, marriage is the bedrock of that society. Marriage makes for centers of order and authority and the healthy raising of children, it allows for thriving neighborhoods. It allows for thriving civic order so that you don't need a nanny government taking away everybody's freedom because things have broken down entirely. We ought to be asking ourselves, my gosh, what have we done so that now half of marriages end in divorce? All these kids are being born out of wedlock. We're locking away millions of our countrymen. Most of them have grown up without fathers. They're in prison now. Whole neighborhoods are blasted to smithereens. You can hardly find a responsible adult male on an entire city block. With all of that going on, now to be talking about allowing two men or two women together to pretend to be married is just insane.
Dr. Anthony Esselin is professor of English at Providence College in Providence, Rhode Island. He's author of the books The Politically Incorrect Guide to Western Civilization and The Ironies of Faith. He's also written a two-part series for Touchstone Magazine titled Sanity and Matrimony, 10 Arguments in Defense of Marriage. You'll find out more about Touchstone at the Listen on Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Dr. Esselin, thank you.
Thank you, Todd.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most radio talk shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salary, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. The address? LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend on you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Planned Parenthood goes back to court.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Planned Parenthood will be heading back to court to defend itself against charges it owes the state of California over $100 million. According to LifeNews.com, an employee-turned-whistleblower said Planned Parenthood affiliates illegally overbilled the state for birth control drugs. The former employee said Planned Parenthood bought contraceptives and other medicines at deeply discounted rates, then billed the state Medi-Cal program for 12 or more times the purchase price. While one federal judge ruled the employee could not bring the suit, the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has reinstated the lawsuit.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.